Welcome to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Docchio, and today my guest is Zach Harper, senior national writer for FanRag Sports and a member of the Leverage the Chat Podcast Network. We got into everything. We talked about the Western Conference teams 5 through 9, got into a little Lakers, talked a little Sixers, and talked a little movies. So, you ready to tip it off? Zach, how you doing?
Good. I haven't podcasted in at least 20 minutes, so I feel like I needed to jump back on one.
You're behind, man. You're behind.
Yeah, I'm behind. Yeah, I've only done one, and now this is the second today, and it's 11 a.m. Like, it's a busy work day.
I honestly think you should just have a live mic on you at all times.
if people want to hear me, sing and rap to myself incoherently, if they want to hear me yell at my dog to stop barking every 4 minutes... if they want to hear me laughing at whatever horrible thing was just said on Levitard's show, then I'm in.
I think there's a market for it, Zach. I really do. I think we're missing out. we got to start trying to find that. There's niche markets for everything, man. We can find something.
I don't know that people need more of me in their lives. I don't think that's a thing.
Oh man, you doubt. It's a crazy world out there, Zach. All right, we've already kind of gone off the rails, so let's bring it back in a bit and talk some basketball. I've been looking at the NBA standings overall, and it's just something I do from day one because I'm a sadist. And I kind of like from day one going like, oh, this is going to be an interesting possible playoff matchup because I get bored. But when you look at the Western Conference and 5 through 9, because the Clippers are 10 right now and they're kind of out of it, it seems, even though they've won 2 straight. It's kind of a shit show. I mean, nobody had New Orleans being 500 at this point. No one had, I mean, Utah was kind of in the mix. Portland was in the mix. Denver, but everybody thought OKC was going to be better than what they've been. And they're on the out looking in. When you look at this kind of shit show of Denver at 5, Portland at 6, New Orleans 7, Utah 8, and then OKC at 9. Like, what do you think is going to kind of happen over the next few weeks? I'm asking you to predict the future, Zach.
Oh, well, I'm very good at predicting the future, as anyone who's ever followed my predictions in the past knows. I get at least 20% right every year, so should be no problem. I don't know. It's weird because, like, Denver's dealing with the Millsap injury, and I think eventually that's just going to be too much for them to overcome. New Orleans is dealing with, like, the fact that they're dealing with a Solomon Hill injury just shows you how bad that roster is after their top three. I don't know what consistency to count on with them. With Portland, like, Portland's who I thought was going to be the 5 seed this year, and they still have a chance to be the 5 seed. They're, what, like a game behind or whatever? The crazy thing with them is, like, their offense isn't very good. Like, their defense has been really solid, and their offense has been, kind of the thing hurting them the most. And so I think that'll get corrected. I don't know if they'll be able to still keep the defense going when the offense gets corrected, but they're still kind of the team I like the most out of that bunch. Utah just got Rudy Gobert back. Hopefully he stays healthy, but Rodney Hood's always in and out of the lineup. Like, they're going to go through, I think, just some wild swings of great basketball and frustrating basketball. And then OKC, I'm writing about them right now. Like, it's weird. I think we keep holding on to this hope that, the Miami Heat started 9-8 in 2010, 2011.
Right.
It's like, LeBron James. LeBron James and a really good Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, who was figuring out how to be a very good two-way player, right? And OKC, it's not that they have scrubs by any means, but Russ is very enigmatic, but great. Melo is on the huge downside of his career. And Paul George should fit a lot better than he does, but there's something keeping them all from gelling right now. Maybe it's coaching, or maybe it's Russ, or maybe it's everything. I don't know. But I keep expecting them to eventually figure it out. At the same time, what if they're the 2012, 2013, this is fun Lakers, right? Like, where, like, Nash, Kobe, Dwight, Pau Gasol, they all come together. This is going to be fun. They're going to get back to the finals. Like, this is all going to be, this incredible experience. And then they were 15-21 after 37 games. 15-21. And a lot of there were injuries and coaching changes and inner strife and all that stuff. Like, right. There was a lot going on. But 15-21 for a team with that much talent. Why do we really think this Thunder team is just going to get it is because we want them to get it or because we truly think there's a basketball reason why they're going to get it. I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs, but I like this idea that everything's going to click at some point just seems wildly ambitious to me.
Yeah, I'm actually of the thought of it will click at some point, and I think it'll click when Melo realizes he's no longer a superstar. That's the only time it will click, you know, so that might be a big if, you know, if he can get to that, because we all saw his reaction, and I had said it early on, when he reacted to that dude asking, you know, if he was going to come off the bench, and his reaction was like, what, who, me?
Right.
I was like, yo, that's a bad sign. It's not a matter of like he has no willingness to change at all. And so that was something that concerned me. And I was like, shit, like if that happens, they're going to be screwed. Like he's got to understand he's the Chris Bosh in this situation. He's the one that has to sacrifice his game the most, I think, of those three guys. I think they'll get to it at some point. It'll almost take, and this is going to sound shitty because you never want to wish an injury, but it'll take a Melo injury where he's got to sit out 10, 12 games and see them rolling during that run. And they got to also get rolling during that run he's out. Kind of realize like, oh, if I'm going to make a difference, like I got to come in and have that thing. And then OKC's lucky that it's such a shit show right now in the West in that 5-9 seeding because nobody's running away with it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the fact that the Clippers are still in it after as horribly as they played last month is kind of crazy, right? Like, they have no business, with the way they've played, they have no business being in it as much as they are, and that will probably correct itself. But yeah, that just shows kind of how open that 5-9, 5-10 is. I'm shocked that Jeremy Grant isn't a 40% three-point shooter like we all saw last year. I am legitimately shocked that, like, Patrick Patterson has been so bad. But I think you're right. Like you obviously never want to wish injury, but if something like that happened, maybe it forces them to reset to where Paul George becomes the clear number two, right? Like the clear number two on that team. And maybe that brings Patrick Patterson into the starting lineup. Maybe as Melo comes back from an injury, if he's the one that gets injured or whatever, like maybe that brings him off the bench in some capacity and they find a rhythm, and then you can convince him like, look, this is the way to go. We'll bring you in early in the games and then you can cook second units and we'll have you in at the end of games. You know, that's probably asking a lot out of Melo's ego at this point, but yeah, it probably does take something extreme to kind of right the ship, which just shouldn't be this way.
Yeah. I mean, you just hope that it was something that like they're going to connect, they're going to make this happen. And the other thing too was, Melo was such a late add to this team. Like, all summer long, Westbrook and George were working out together. It was like a buddy-buddy cop movie sort of thing. And they were kind of – you would see them at the New York runs together, and they were always playing on the same team. No different than, like, Chris Paul and James Harden. Like, they're developing some sort of chemistry. The coaching staff is putting together a plan with those guys. And then – you know, here comes the wrench. We're going to throw in Melo. That's not an easy guy to just sub in. You know, and now it's like, all right, now our subbing rotations are going to change. And we were going to play Patrick Patterson 20 minutes with, you know, in this lineup. Now he's going to play 12 or whatever. And now it's just like, you're screwed. And you only have 3 or 4 days before training camp begins to really have to start figuring that out. So this is all work in progress. I think, you know, having grown up a Lakers fan, and I'm no longer a Lakers fan now, but growing up watching it, I'm well aware of a team capable of flipping the switch. I don't know if these guys are it, but it's like we're saying, I think it's got to take a catastrophic sort of event for them to realize, like, oh, fuck, we got to do it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of tough figuring out how much of this is on Billy Donovan and how much of this is on Russ. Right? Because those are the two, like, either Billy Donovan has to be like, look, this is how we're doing it. If you don't want it, like, you're not playing. Like, you're not getting your minutes, which he doesn't really seem like that demonstrative type of voice. So that's probably not going to work. And at that point, isn't it on Russ? And maybe that's on Billy to get through to Russ, but isn't it on Russ to be like, look, this isn't working. Like, whatever this is, like, this is, like, they had what? They had, like, three nice wins in a row at home, right? Like, they started 8-12. They beat the Wolves. They beat the Spurs. They beat the Jazz. Great. looks like you figured it out on some level, right? Like those aren't world beaters. I mean, the Spurs are always good, but you know, no Kawhi. Like, you can talk yourself into like maybe that wasn't a great victory, but beating Utah the way they were playing, beating Minnesota with the way they dropped two games earlier in the season to Minnesota, like those are three good wins. And then you lose in Brooklyn. You barely outlast an Andrew Harrison backcourt in Memphis in right. overtime. And then you get shredded in the second half to Charlotte at home. Like, you can't have that wild of a swing, even as you're figuring things out, because, you know, they're 26 games in the season for them at this point. I think they're 12-14. Not that you should have things figured out, but it shouldn't be this unclear what you have left to work on. Because what they have left to work on is just, like, I think it's great they're the second best defensive team in the league. That's something we should focus on and commend them on, right?
Yeah.
Because that's hard for a newer group to do together. Second in the league is obviously an elite level of defense. I don't think it's fluky. Like, this is a good defensive team. Even with Melo, like, this is a good defensive team. And at the same time, like, you added Paul George and Carmelo Anthony while giving up Oladipo, Sabonis, Enes Kanter, Doug McDermott. Like, that's not four major weapons, even though Oladipo's been great this year. But you added those two players, and you are far worse offensively than you were last year? That's crazy.
That's where I think Donovan comes in. I think, you know, I'm with you. Russ has got to change, and at a certain point, he's got to step up and be the voice in the locker room. But at a certain point, the coach has to do it first. And you know, right. I've been on teams where, you know, I was in San Antonio with Pop. Like, no question, Pop was the voice. You know, when he said something, everybody moved. Billy Donovan doesn't quite carry that command, and also it helps that Pop's won championships already. But the way I look at Donovan, the way he coaches and stuff, I'm like, you're just too passive for this team. He'd be great with a young team, and he can grow as a coach with those guys at the NBA level. Like, it's different in college, right? These kids are like 18, 19, 20 years old. They're all trying to go to the league. You make more money than them.
Right.
The NBA, it's like, look, these dudes can get you fired very quickly, you know, and they have a lot more power. So I think, you know, a lot of coaches tend to be very timid in that sense, but like...
He's making Alex Sabrinas money.
Yeah.
Right, like that.
Right. And we don't look at Alex Sabrinas expecting him to go tell Melo, like, yo, you got to come off the bench.
Although it seems like he's more likely to do it.
Yes, but that's the point, right? Like, that's the problem, right? Like, at a certain point, you got to, as a coach, I don't care about the language. You know, you just got to whip your dick out on the table and say, like, this is what we're doing. And it's like, if you don't like it, it's like you said, you don't like it, you're going to sit. And that's fine. Because sometimes the biggest win for a coach is if you sit that player and you go out and win, it's like, we don't even fucking need you.
Right.
You know, so get in line. And I think that's kind of a big issue with Oklahoma. I've never been a fan of Billy Donovan to begin with, so I didn't think he was that great of a coach. And I watched their offense, and I'm not impressed by anything they do.
Is there an offensive system?
No, I don't know what they're trying to get at. It's your turn, my turn, his turn.
Yeah, which I think I actually don't think that's terrible, a your turn, my turn type of deal. But there has to be structure within that. I think you can get by even in today's NBA on isolation heavy attacks, but there has to be structure in order to create advantageous mismatches, right? In order to and have guys ready to either crash the boards, like you can be that kind of a team where you're putting your transition defense at risk, but you're at least crashing the boards, and Steven Adams is really good at that, and Paul George can be really good at that. And so I think there are ways to do that where you're still spreading the floor with shooters to give that room to operate. Because even though it's isolation based, you can still have ball movement. You can still have passes out of those isolation sets. It's just the problem is that they seem to just choke the life out of the ball. Like, there aren't quick attacks within those isolations. They're just running down the clock.
They don't even cut, dude. Like,
right. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you got to have a feign of a cut, right?
Yeah. Just something. Move.
Yeah.
It's painful when I watch it sometimes. I'm screaming at the TV. I think my neighbors think I'm nuts when I'm yelling move. They must think I have somebody over at my place. And I'm just like, move!
They're just unreasonable about where they sit on the couch.
Yeah, Like, what the? They go like, Mo's just crazy, and that's that. Which I am, but not for those reasons. Let me ask you this question: when Russell Westbrook needs to get hyped up, what movie do you think he's watching?
Oh, I think he's just watching the scene from the second Matrix where Neo is fighting all of those Agent Smiths in the playground. I think that's what he watches.
I've kind of been thinking about it. I think he watches Baby Driver.
Oh man, I hated that movie.
Did you? I didn't see it. I'll be honest, but I just feel like the kid doesn't talk and just go race car driving at it.
Yeah, I had the same feeling with that as I did with Sin City, where like the first 10 minutes of it, I'm like, oh cool, I get it. Like Sin City was like, oh look at this, it looks like a comic book, right?
Right.
And then with Baby Driver, it's like, oh, everything's queued up with the music. It's like, okay, cool, I get it. And then, like, anything outside of what Jamie Foxx was doing on the screen, I was just like, this needs to end. This is not this. And everyone loved it. And I'm not trying to be the guy who doesn't like the movie everyone loves. Like, I guess I get it, but I just, like, it got old to me. And I didn't think whatever that guy's name is, who's the actor, like, the main actor. Like, I didn't think he was captivating enough to carry the movie.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. I want to go back to one point, the Blazers that we were talking about real quick. Interesting stat for you. I don't know if you caught it. They had mentioned it in the Warriors game last night. I didn't realize it. They are dead last in assists per game at 18.1.
The Thunder?
No, the Blazers.
Oh, the Blazers, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to them real quick. That's astonishing to me because I feel like with Dame and CJ – even with when Nurkic, who hasn't been playing as well as he did when he got there after the trade, but like I felt like those guys move the ball. It's not like they're so against making the right pass. I'm 18 assists a game. That's it.
Yeah, and I mean they're like a middle of the road pace team, so it's not like it's a 18 assists a game and they're playing the slowest pace, right? It's right. Not like they're grinding out 88 possessions a game or whatever. Yeah, I guess it is just like CJ's not a guy who makes a lot of plays for other players. Dame's not a high assist guy. I guess you would expect Evan Turner to come in and be that guy, like maybe average 4 or 5 assists a game. And it's weird too, because when I think of a Terry Stotts offense, I think of, you know, spacing and ball movement and player movement and creating quality looks. And they did that in the past, but also they're not hitting shots, right? So I mean, you can't get assists if guys aren't hitting shots. They don't seem to hit anything inside the 3-point line.
Yeah, I mean they're definitely struggling. I mean they've lost like what, 5 straight, 6 straight.
Yeah,
and like you, I thought they could be in the 5-6 seed kind of thing, and now I'm getting a little worried. Watch them. I mean, they're a team that desperately needs to make a trade, but I don't think they have pieces anybody really wants. You know, like, anybody really going to trade for Evan Turner in that contract?
Oh, God. I mean...
And I'm an Evan Turner guy. Like, I love Evan Turner.
I don't know what that means. Those words you just said, I don't know what that means.
I think he brings something to... I think Evan Turner has value if you use him in the right way. I wouldn't pay him as much as they're paying him. But there's a way to use it.
What would you pay him? What do you think he's worth? Like, for the production you get and the presence on. I know he's a good teammate, but you know, you can find good teammates elsewhere. What do you think you would give him?
Okay, so right now he's making $17 a year. I'm saying I probably wouldn't pay more than $12. You know, I and that might be high, but I probably don't pay him more than that.
I'd give him Jay Crowder money. I'd give him $7 a year.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I just think he does bring, like, I think he's a pretty good defender. He's not super athletic. I think for the Blazers, like, they should use him more as a playmaker out of the post, kind of like what you were talking about, the Thunder, in those ISO situations. Like, he's a pretty good passer out of the post, and he's big enough when he has a small guard on him, he can bully his way to the basket.
Yeah.
The shooting's terrible. Like, there's no question about that. But, you know, he hustles. He kind of brings the intangible. So that's what I mean. When I'm an Evan Turner guy, like, I like watching him when he's doing that stuff. Now, he hasn't done that very much this year for them, And a lot of times they're playing him in lineups where it's easy to defend him, and then they just have him go stand in the corner. And I'm like, yeah, that's how you get fired.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you're going to use him, he has to have the ball in his hands.
Yeah. And I get, like, you don't want to take the ball out of Dame or CJ's hands.
I'm trying to think of the last time I enjoyed an Evan Turner play. Like, it might legitimately be Ohio State.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't think I've enjoyed one single play of Evan Turner in the NBA.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
I am definitely not an Evan Turner guy.
That's fair. I mean, I might be the only one. So
I'm sure there's still some Boston Celtics fan that, like, remembers him fondly. I'm sure that exists.
Oh, your favorite fan base.
I have a little secret. I hate all fan bases equally.
I know you do, but they think.
Oh, they think, yeah.
What their opinion is a different story.
No, I want all fan bases to know I hate you all equally.
Oh, like, I got Laker fans riled up about Alonzo tweet a few weeks ago, and I'm like, I rabidly hate all of you. and now hope you guys lose every fucking game because you're so annoying. But that's a story for another time. Let's get into your two favorite teams to me, though, are the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Utah Jazz. So I want to talk about them a little bit. I want to start with Minnesota because that's another team that's, you just kind of look at them going like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. I mean, they still can't defend. You know, Jimmy Butler mentions it after every single win. Of that, great, we won, but we're not defending, so it doesn't matter. It's interesting, like, talking about the fan base. Like, that fan base probably drives me the craziest. Just because there is so much panic involved. And for a team that draws so horribly at home, I don't understand. Like, you don't seem that invested in the team.
You don't go.
Yeah, you don't go. Like, you don't seem that invested in the team. But it's funny because last year Thibodeau went with the young guys, right? Like, he was like, you know what? I'm not going to overreact in my first summer. You know, he explored some Jimmy Butler trade scenarios. Didn't happen. He tried to go get Al Horford. Wasn't interested. He tried to get Luol Deng. Wouldn't give him a fourth year. And even I think the third year was in question, but definitely wouldn't give him a fourth year. Went after Courtney Lee. Couldn't get him, right? So, like, after those options, he wasn't just going to spend money to spend money. He was like, all right, I'll roll it out with the young guys. I'll see what I got. And they didn't win. And they probably should have won maybe 5 or 6 more games than they did. But they were a 31, 32-win team, something like that. And it was, we're going to take our lumps. I'm going to teach them through failure, you know, through, like, emphasize the good points, but also teach them when they're failing. Like, here's what you're doing wrong. And we're going to learn from that. And about, like, you know, a month into the season, what I was getting from fans, and maybe this isn't like, you know, a great synopsis of the entire fan base, but at least what I experienced, it was, I'm sick of the losing. I don't care how we win. I just want the team to win games. Okay, yeah, longest drought for the playoffs in the NBA. I get it. You wanted more of the short view than the long view, or you wanted both. Like, you wanted the cake and eat it too and all that shit. I get it. This year, they're winning games. It's kind of ugly. But they're like 16-11, best team in the division right now, record-wise. They're winning games, and it has become, well, I don't like the way we're winning games. It's like, well, hold on, man. Like, last year you didn't care, you just wanted them to win. Well, now they're winning, and it's, I don't like the way it's happening. Like, it's just moving the goalpost to me. And granted, there are different expectations because they acquired Jimmy Butler. But yeah, until Kat embraces the defensive system, until Gorgui Dieng figures out how to defend a pick and roll, until you know, Andrew Wiggins starts knocking down shots again, and until Nemanja Bjelica gets healthy or Shabazz Muhammad learns how to play basketball again, like, they're just going to be these. Oh, he had two solid years as a bench scorer. Like that's the thing. He can't even, like, it's not even like, oh, if he learns to shoot, like, he can't even score in the ways he used to score. Like, he can't post up. He's not crashing the boards and making stuff happen off that. He's not running the floor all that well. Like, he's just doing nothing. So, like, in terms of what his role is, like, yeah, he can get back to that pretty easily. But until that stuff happens, they're going to have to grind out these victories that are probably frustrating. But ultimately, if they're victories, that's all that matters. Like, to me, you just have to stop the playoff drought. However that happens, doesn't matter. You stop the playoff drought, you make the playoffs, you get slaughtered in the first round or whatever happens, and then it's, all right, we did it. No more if they can make the playoffs. You have made the playoffs now. Now figure out how to be good in them. And that's when the real expectations, in my mind, get kind of piled onto this team. And maybe that is pie in the sky, or that's a little too emotionless or whatever. But that's, to me, that's the reality of this team, is that you gotta win, and then you got to figure out how to win better.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you got to learn how to win. And that's the thing about the NBA. Like, young guys got to learn how to win games. And down the stretch, we saw them struggle last year down the stretch. And I haven't seen the numbers, but I'm guessing they're better this year down the stretch. I mean, the Wiggins.
Yeah, I think they're 9-6 in clutch, or games that trigger clutch situation.
Perfect. You know, yeah. They're improving there in that regard. The thing that scares me is just how little Thibodeau plays the bench. And I know there's rumblings, because I know the guys on the bench are not that happy with the minutes. Like, Jamal Crawford's not happy with just 17 minutes a night.
Sure.
You know, and I get it too. He doesn't defend. I always thought it was a weird signing when he ended up in Minnesota, because I was like, huh, you're going to hate Thibodeau. Thibodeau's probably going to hate you.
They struck out on so many guys.
Right, right. But I just don't understand why Jamal wanted to go.
I mean, it was $4 million a year, and he probably thought, yeah, we'll be a playoff team. Like, you look at, I mean, that's the thing to me. Like, people are like, oh, well, if they don't have the depth to play, that's on Tom Thibodeau. It's not like he didn't try to sign every wing out there. Like, he made a pitch. They had only so much money. If you want to criticize the Jeff Teague trade, fine, but he fits better in what they're trying to do than what Ricky Rubio does. And I'm definitely a Rubio guy over Teague, but if you can't see the logic in switching them out while also gaining a draft pick that they had lost in an Adrian Payne trade, like, I mean, this is like, it's a better fit. It's a worse fit defensively. Jeff Teague isn't a good defender, and Ricky Rubio is, but offensively, which is what they're, you know, building, it makes a lot more sense. And Teague's actually been pretty good.
Like, yeah, he's done well for them.
Yeah, has he been $19 million a year good? Yeah, probably not. Like, even when you account for inflation, but he's knocking down threes. Like, he knocks down threes for them. That is something they haven't had a very long time out of a point guard. Probably since Chauncey Billups, right? Like, that's probably the last point guard
I'm trying to think.
Knock down threes.
You're right. I mean,
and that's not everything, but like, that, in terms of space in the floor, they need to, and the way they need to, like, yeah, that, like, they need him. Taj Gibson's been a fantastic signing. Like, he has been so important for them. And that signing got killed in the offseason. But yeah, like, they tried to sign Nick Young. They tried to sign Omri Caspi. They tried to sign Dante Cunningham. Like, they tried to sign a bunch of guys who you could throw into wing rotations, and they ended up with having to re-sign Shabazz Muhammad, who, by the way, turned down 4 years, $40 million. And like, because he thought he was getting 20 a year.
Right.
Like, he turned that down, and now it looks like, you know, a horrific decision for him.
Who's advising these guys sometimes?
That's a question. I mean, that's my God. But like, so he turned down that money, and it seems like he is now in his head about that. And that's why he's, you know, part of the reason why he's playing even worse than he has in the past. And they ended up with like Marcus Georges Hunt, which is apparently a real person. And like, outside of that, like, they don't have wing depth because they couldn't get guys to sign there. Now, I think that they should probably try to scour the D League. They do have an open roster spot. They have Anthony Brown on a two-way, and so eventually he'll come into the mix and maybe give them a couple of minutes here and there as like a potential 3-and-D guy. But I don't like the idea that, well, this is the bed Tom Thibodeau made for him. No, he tried. Now, it's on him to convince those people, but how often do we say like, oh, I'm surprised that guy didn't sign with Minnesota. I'm surprised that NBA player didn't want to go live in Minneapolis. Like, that's just, like, I love Minneapolis as a city. But NBA players don't seem to love it because they don't want that winner. And I get it. And the team has not been good in 14 years. Like, there are just a lot of factors that go into it that I think we conveniently forget just because we want to kill Tom Thibodeau. It doesn't mean Tom Thibodeau shouldn't be killed. Like, he's done plenty of stuff wrong, but he's done a lot of stuff right, and there's a lot of stuff where his hands are tied.
Yeah, and the only thing I'd say that would – I think free agents and it might be the agents at play as well in this, like – the history of Thibodeau actually playing guys off his bench is pretty low. Like, he burns these dudes to the ground. So, like, those guys, I could see agents going, like, you can go there, but I don't know how many more minutes you're going to get. And if you're going to sign a one-year deal or a two-year deal, you need to up your value. And you're not going to be able to do that in Minnesota. So I think that's the issue. But you are right in people thinking it's just so easy. Like, I'll tell you.
You want to? Here's real quick. Jeff Teague is the biggest free agent the team has ever signed. Do you know who the second biggest free agent they've ever signed is?
No. Who you got?
Kevin Martin. In the franchise's history, that is the second best free agent this organization has ever signed in an offseason. Now, they've traded for guys. They traded for Charles Friel. They traded for Sam Cassell. Like, they've made good moves in the past. But in terms of just signing a free agent, before Jeff Teague, it was Kevin Martin.
That pretty much sums it up. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Right.
Like, what do you – like, there's a certain thing where it's like players don't want to go sign in Minnesota. Yeah, they just don't.
And it's just like – just fans sometimes are getting a little bit crazy with the Clippers. We got a letter once outlining how we should go forward. And it was like, yeah, you guys should go sign Pau Gasol and then trade for Mark Gasol. And we were just like, yeah, why didn't we think of that? Like, we're just that dumb. We don't think that way. It's just that easy, you know. So I'm with you on the unfair Thibodeau hate he gets.
You're right. And I'm not trying to say like he shouldn't play guys more. Like, he probably should trust the bench a little bit more. But I also look at that bench. I'm like, I don't know. Not a lot of playable guys on that roster.
Right. I don't know who you would trust. But yeah, you're right on that. Let's slide over to the Jazz, which are. They're low-key one of the funnest teams to watch with, you know, Donovan Mitchell just lighting it up right now. And it's 2 weeks ago it was he should be the rookie of the year kind of thing. And people were like, he's going to make a real run at it. And now they get Gobert back. I mean, I was shocked they survived the Gobert injury. Like, I thought when he got hurt, I was like, shit, they might not win for a while. When you look at it, like, what's going on there, dude? Like, they're balling. As well as they can with that roster.
Yeah, I think like the key for them is they had an identity going into this season, right? Like even like Gordon leaves, George Hill leaves, they still had an identity as a defensive team because they still had Rudy Gobert. So they were able to. I think that's the hardest thing for teams that are reshaping or rebuilding or have a bunch of young players. Like they don't have a bunch of young players, but you know what I mean. Like teams that are kind of changing on the fly is do you still have an identity? Or what's your next identity? And they were able to keep their identity. So that was huge for them because they knew we're a defensive-minded team that is going to play slow and it's going to choke the court. Like, that's what we're going to do. And that's what they've been able to do so far. Donovan Mitchell being a big-time player for them as a rookie has certainly helped. Like, if he wasn't good right away, I think this team would really struggle. Especially because Rodney Hood is in and out of the lineup with injuries and in and out of the lineup with consistency problems too, right? Like, and you can't really rely on Derek Favors to be a top two guy for you. So like, there's just some things, but they also like, they went out and got Thabo Sefolosha. They went out and got Jonas Jerebko. They went out and got Ricky Rubio, who's been up and down for them, but they went and got Ekpe Udo. Like they went and got veterans who know how to play and can plug into roles. And that's the main reason why they've been able to kind of embrace that identity is they just have versatile guys who can, you know, the team still pretty much sucks offensively at times, but they know they can rely on their defense to try to win games, and they use their home court advantage to their advantage, and they're well coached. Like Quinn Snyder's a really smart coach.
Yeah, I mean you said it on your last podcast on Talk Hoops, and you were right. Like Pop should win it every year, and we're gonna name it the Popovich, you know, award whenever Pop decides to hang it up.
Yeah.
But Quinn Snyder should be in the running. I know it's going to go to Brad Stevens. Everybody's going to talk about that. But
right.
Quinn Snyder is a great coach. And it's, you know, I talked about it on my last podcast. He's just like a mad scientist. And he kind of has that look, too. If he had like a white overcoat, like lab coat on,
right.
I would kind of feel like he would be, like I could see him with a beaker and just kind of, you know, tweaking. And, you know, if I add a little bit of a jump shot here and he spaces this way, you know, boom, perfect play. And I could just see him doing that. The one thing that scares me about the Jazz, they are terrible on the road.
And yeah. Just,
and they're on a six-game road trip. I mean, they lost to Milwaukee on Saturday, but then they have five more on the road, and I'm just like, ooh, this could get bad.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the problem with just, like, a team that can't really score consistently, right? Is that it's great that they can rely on their defense and everything I just said, but there comes these – late game situations with these close games, and you just wonder, like, if Donovan Mitchell isn't cooking, what's going to happen? And granted, like, Joe Johnson's been out, and once he comes back, that'll help things in that respect. But like, they're so challenged offensively with certain lineups on the floor, and it's lineups they need to play. that's just, I mean, until they can figure that out, and they probably can't figure that out with the personnel they have this season, but until they can figure that out, like, I just think you're going to see those huge disparities between home and away.
And you were right on 100% about they had the identity coming in, and that's what, you know, they getting defensive guys like Cephalosha and stuff just fits perfect in their identity. Random question for you.
Yes.
What terrible movie are you looking forward to in 2018?
What's it called? It's gonna shock you. It's a Nick Cage movie. Primal?
No.
Primal? I think it's sort of like a Noah's Ark type of movie, and it's like, I think he fights a jaguar on a boat at some point. Like, I can't wait.
That's and no surprises.
As soon as it was like kind of announced or whatever, like Mike Ryan from the Levitard Show, who is a huge Nick Cage enthusiast, like messaged me. He was like, "Yo, have you seen this?"
That's about right. And if anybody doesn't know Zach, and I'm a little disappointed if you don't, he's a diehard Nick Cage fan.
I appreciate his catalog.
You are a Nick Cage stan. That's
100%. People say he's a bad actor. Well, then how does he have an Academy Award for Best Actor?
There you go.
It was the best actor.
My favorite thing on Twitter is when somebody tells you they are about to begin to watch the movie next for the first time. Yep. And you're like, I will see you in 90 minutes.
See you in 90 minutes. And it is always the same reaction. Nobody is happy with what they've just done.
I love it. It's one of my favorite.
It has the most infuriating twist. Like M. Night Shyamalan would be like, I don't know about that, guys. Like, I don't, like, what are we doing here? Like, it has one of the most infuriating twists in movie history that make you realize you just wasted an hour and a half. But I do encourage people to check it out because it is an experience, and it's really fun for me to have people get mad about that.
It's great. I love it. So if anybody's going to watch it, please tweet it, Zach, when you do.
Yeah, let me know when you start, and then 90 minutes from now, I expect a terse wording to email.
I love it. I love it, man. The other thing I love, Zach, more than terrible movies, is gelato.
And I love me some gelato.
Great. I'm glad to hear it, because I know you're relatively new to L.A., and I got to take you to my favorite gelato shop. It's called Uli's Gelateria. They have two locations. So they've opened a second location right by the Grove, which is, you know, obviously my fans out of L.A., and that really just, I don't think I have fans to begin with, so it doesn't matter. It's on 3rd Street, on 3rd Street in between Crescent Heights and Fairfax.
Oh, that's close to me.
Oh, see, you got to get the gelato, man. And it's healthy, dude. I'm telling you, it's healthy. Healthier than ice cream.
So that's the thing, is I have a sweet tooth, but at the same time, I don't like being fat. So it's something where I need to quench that thirst for sweets. I need to satiate that craving. But I need to do it in a semi-healthy way. So that's huge news for me.
It's perfect. It's perfect. You could take Black Tray because they have vegan flavors.
Oh, perfect.
I recommend, I don't know, I know it's not vegan, so he can't have it, but you should have all of the Speculoos cookies. That is my favorite flavor. You can't go wrong with that one. They also have a downtown location on Spring Street in between 5th and 6th. It's in the Spring Arcade. If you go there, I highly recommend it. Great staff, great people, great flavors. You can't go wrong with Gelateria Uli's. And now back to basketball. Where are you on the Lakers? Now we're just going to go off the rails for a few minutes, and then we'll go back to what we really want to talk about, which is more movies. Where are you on the Lakers?
They're actually a little bit better than I thought they'd be. I don't really know what to expect out of them. Like, they can't shoot, right? It's like, I mean, they really can't shoot. They're the worst 3-point shooting team in the league. I love what I've seen out of Brandon Ingram. I'm not a Julius Randle guy, but he's been very good for them off the bench, especially playing the five. I love Brook Lopez. Kyle Kuzma has been a delight, aside from the historically bad shot making. I actually think Lonzo Ball has been pretty solid for a rookie in every other aspect of the game. You know, he has some pretty bad games, but he also has some very solid all around games too. So I think it's easier for me to focus on the on the positive with him, you'd like him to be able to hit a free throw or make a layup. I don't know that I expect the jumper to be there right now, but I mean, for what that team, for like the like that team's not very good, and they're 10-15. Like I think it's about as well as you could have expected them to start, and somehow I think they're still a top 10 defense.
Yeah, which is mind blowing.
Yeah, like that's the that might be the biggest upset of the season so far. That team should be horrendous defensively.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with the team. They're better than I thought they would be. I honestly thought they were going to just be straight trash. And I was just like, they're going to be bad, but it'll be fun to watch and things like that. They're actually fun to watch, and they're pretty good. Like, they have – and it's a weird team because, like you said, they're pretty good, but they don't shoot. They can't make shots. They just – in those 10 games they win, they just find ways to win. They find ways to stay in games, which is part of their defense.
Yeah.
And it's kind of – it's impressive, like – they're in these games. They play the Warriors tough. And granted, the Warriors didn't take them seriously. You could tell. But they still play those guys pretty tough. And they hang in games. That Philly-Laker game last week was fucking awesome.
Oh, that was so good.
You know, like, I can go – I'm good for let those guys play again in the playoffs. Like, I don't – like, I'll watch them anytime. Those two – the two times they've matched up have been phenomenal basketball games.
Yeah, I mean that Joel Embiid game the first time was just oh my god,
dude. I love him. I think he's great for the NBA. I think he's tons of fun. I think, you know, just the whole thing from the trash talking to, you know, him being able to back it up. Hopefully he can make it all year. I'm gonna knock on wood, but he's been fun to watch. That big shot from Ingram, you know, like that, just, what that does for your confidence is amazing.
Yeah, and to me the talent was clearly there. Like everyone mentions that he has to get bigger and stronger, and that's an obvious because he's 84 pounds. But like the skills are just there. Like he needs to figure it out, and he needs to, you know, kind of figure out counter moves because he is going right almost every time, and teams know it. But his length and his handle are so good for his, you know, for what he is physically. And I think I do think he's a better 3-point shooter than he's been so far, and he doesn't really take a whole lot of them. But like people just freaked out about how bad he was as a rookie, and not like it's not like I don't want to do the internet thing of like four people mentioned to me that he's a bust and he's never going to be good. So I'm like, hey, people were writing him off. Like, you know, I don't want to do that, but like people were really down on him. And it's like sometimes it just takes a year. Like not everyone's Blake Griffin out of the gate. Not everyone's Kyrie Irving or Damian Lillard out of the gate. Like some rookies take a year. And then they kind of get their bearings and the game slows down a little bit and they get a little stronger and they get a little more confident. And, you know, Luke Walton was asking him to do stuff in preseason that wasn't very comfortable in terms of role and fit, but it's kind of like a trial by fire thing with him. And he's just going to be really good. Like, is he going to be Ben Simmons good? No, probably not. But like, he's going to be really good for that.
Yeah. And when people like, if people could say like, is he going to be Ben Simmons good? Yo, Ben Simmons might be amazing. You know, it's hard to make that comparison, and I love the point you make of it just takes guys longer sometimes. It might take more than a year. You know,
right.
Look at Chris Dunn's a great example. Like in Minnesota, struggled. It's a situational thing. Minnesota is trying to make the playoffs last year. Tibbs is playing the young guys, but he's got a quick hook on Dunn, right? And now he goes to Chicago, which is, listen, we're just gonna play. We're going to be bad. We're trying to tank, but go out there, make mistakes, and we'll improve. And he's had a hell of a run in the past 2 weeks. You know, it just everybody takes a different amount of time, and it's easy to forget. This kid's 20, 21 years old. I'm 36, and I still don't think I've hit my stride yet. Hopefully, I'll hit my stride at some point. But
expecting my hops to come back every day.
Yeah, you know, it just takes a time, and I don't think people understand. It's a vastly different world when you go from 1 year of college and high school basketball into the NBA. You don't worry about money anymore. You have meals catered to, you know, flights, your practice, you're flying, you're playing back to backs.
You don't have to pretend to go to class anymore.
Right, exactly. You know, there's a whole kind of weird world to you. All of a sudden you have more free time, but you need to work on your game, and it's just such a weird kind of. Like, it would take a year to figure it out. I don't think – listen, Philly's had guys that have sat out, you know, years and stuff, but it may not be a bad idea to get acclimated to what the NBA lifestyle is. You know, of course you want guys playing and things like that and get used to playing on NBA games as well. But it's also like, just as a life thing, it takes a second to kind of figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah, and not to be the NBA guy who shits all over college basketball, but like college basketball sucks.
Oh, it's terrible.
It's really bad, and you go to the NBA level, like it's just a completely different game. It's the same sport, but it's a completely different game.
It's god awful. I'm with you. I can't watch college basketball. Like I can't do it. I don't want to make that the podcast here, but
yeah,
it's such a different game. Shot clock, different guys are bigger and stronger. The
Guys' livelihood, like unless you're playing Kentucky, guys' livelihoods aren't at stake in, you know, in allegedly in college basketball. It's just not how it is.
Yeah, right. You know, and it's just like, look, the 12th man on any NBA team was a star at college, most likely.
Yeah, those guys are all the best player to ever come from their neighborhood or their city, right? For the most part, like there's some exceptions here. They're like, those guys are just like, that guy's the greatest player ever, the greatest player we've ever seen, and he's like the 12th man on the team.
He's they're debating whether to send him to the D League or not. Like, I don't think people realize how hard it is. Zach, you there?
Uh-oh, did I lose you?
Yeah, I lost you for a second.
Okay.
No worries. Here's the last question I'll send you out on. Movie question. So if you're not interested, you can just turn it off. Make sure you rate and leave reviews on the podcast and add Zach to your Twitter follows. We asked you, what's the worst movie you're looking forward to? What's the best movie you're looking forward to in 2018?
I'm trying to think what's coming out.
Yeah, it's a hard question considering you're not knowing what's coming out and all that.
I'm doing a quick Google search of. Well, I don't know if it's the best.
Okay.
I got real excited for that Jurassic World.
Oh, no, that's automatic.
I got real excited. Like, man, dinosaurs, modern day, people getting attacked by, you know, running away from, like, I'm in. Like, I even like Jurassic Park 3. Yeah. That's how much I love this world that has been created by, you know, Michael Crichton and Steven Spielberg. Like, I'm in on the whole dinosaurs against modern man and all that. I'm not a big comic book movie guy, but Black Panther looks really good. I'm trying to think if there's like a non like big blockbuster movie that looks like something to me.
I asked these also because I have a movie pass now.
Oh, I just got that. And I have no idea how to use it.
It's awesome. I'll tell you offline because nobody will care, and I don't want to give them too much of a free ad.
Okay, sure. But it's not awesome. It might be cool. We'll wait to see
We'll see. I'm testing it out for everybody, and yeah. If they want to pay me to really talk about it, you know, hit me up. my DMs are open, MoviePass people. I am just waiting for you.
Oh, the other one I'm very excited for. The sequel to The Strangers. The Strangers is my favorite horror movie of all time. The trailer for the new one, granted, it's not hard to make a trailer look good, but the trailer for the new one, like, I'm 100% in. If it's even 75% as good as the first one, like, I will love it.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Sorry, I lied. That wasn't my last question. What's your opinion on trailers? Because I hate them. Once I decide I want to see a movie, I have to go out of my way to avoid trailers.
I definitely don't want to keep seeing trailers for a movie I really want to see. Like, there, I'm trying to think of. There was one example recently of sort of a big movie. Man, what did I see?
Well, like, while you think of that, like, when I realized how much I hate trailers was the movie The Departed. Because, and if I'm spoiling it for you, too bad. It was fucking years ago. But the scene where Martin Sheen gets thrown out of the window, right? And it's like,
yeah.
they show that in the trailers. They show him, like, a dude in a green jacket falling. And then it's like, while I'm watching the movie, it's like I see him with the green jacket. I'm like, oh, he's about to die.
Right.
Like, why show that in the movie, in the trailers? I would actually like the trailers that have scenes that have been deleted from the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think they did that with Twister. Yes. I remember Twister, there's like the last shot of the trailer is this tire flying into a windshield, and then that never happens in the movie.
Zach, no, you don't understand. Like, I was all in on that. That to the point that I just assumed it was a post-credit scene.
Yeah.
And sat in, by myself in the theater while everybody left, waiting for that scene to be like, I saw it. I shit you not. And as I walked out, the dudes who were cleaning the theater were like, "This, like, damn, that movie scared the shit out of him." I was like, no, I was waiting for the tire.
Yeah. 100%. Like, that still bothers me. Oh, I thought of the movie. Thor, what is it, Ragnarok? I don't know how to say that word. I think, like, so seeing the trailer actually maybe, so this is kind of the paradox here. Seeing the trailer made me want to see the movie. Because I'd never seen a Thor movie other than the Avengers, unless Avengers and Babysitting counts. But I'd never seen a Thor movie. I had really no interest. And then I saw that trailer and I was like, oh shit, this looks really good. Like, I'm going to see it. But then watching the movie, I wished I hadn't known that the Incredible Hulk was in it. Like, I think that scene where he goes to fight him in the Colosseum or whatever the hell he's, like, in that sort of gladiator battle, like, I think if that had been a reveal in the movie, I think it would have had a much bigger impact. But I knew he was coming. I knew, so that scene was already spoiled. And I feel like that's kind of a big scene.
Yeah, like, I wish they would just hide those more. You know, like, I am doing everything I can possibly avoid Star Wars commercials, previews. Like, I just changed the channel now. Like, as soon as I see it, I just start to flip channels and things. And then, of course, I got stuck at a red light yesterday with a video billboard basically playing the trailer. And I just put my head down and said, I'm waiting for the car behind me to honk to tell me when to go, because I'm not looking up until it's time to drive.
I feel like I saw a trailer for Pitch Perfect 3 and it made me want to see the movie a lot less. Oh, yeah, I love the first Pitch Perfect. Shout out to my guy Utkarsh, who's in it. I love that movie. The second one was like, ooh, I don't know about this. This was, you know, they had some of the hits, but not great. And then the third one, I'm looking at, I'm like, all right, I'm going to see it and I'll probably see it in the theater, but I have almost zero expectations for enjoying this movie.
I'm going to hate one.
Yeah. Although, also on the flip side of that, I had no idea The Disaster Artist was coming out until like 2 weeks ago. And seeing the trailer where, I don't want to, you know, ruin a trailer for you or a movie because of the trailer, but it's essentially like just James Franco as the guy screwing up one scene over and over again. And so that trailer, I was like, oh, one, I didn't know this movie was coming out. And two, this sold me on the, like, I would have wanted to see the movie anyway, but like, this sold me on how much I want to see this movie. So yeah, it like, mostly, I'm okay for a shot of a trailer, and then I don't read reviews before. None of that stuff. The only thing I want to know is if a movie has like an unbelievably low Rotten Tomatoes score. And I know the Rotten Tomatoes thing is, especially for movies coming out, is very, you know, controversial. But if a movie is hitting like 30% or less, you know, before it comes out, like, that will make me want to go see the movie in theaters.
I'm with you. One movie I'll say that's worth seeing that I can't wait to come out, I'm excited for, is Molly's Game on Christmas.
Which movie? I cut out.
Molly's Game.
Oh, yeah.
That is definitely... Listen, I'm Muslim. I don't care about Christmas. So Christmas Day, I am...
I'm not Muslim, and I don't really care about Christmas.
Right. So, that's what I'm doing. I'm watching basketball and trying to figure out which game I don't care about enough to go watch that.
Yeah, I've just decided that – I think I decided – well, we'll see if I get it cleared with work. But I decided yesterday that, like, you know what? I think I'm going to skip Lakers-Timberwolves at Staples on Christmas Day, and I'm going to go up to my family in Oregon a few days earlier. And before, I was going to work the game, and then I was going to leave the next day. And now I'm just like, I don't really care. I don't want to be there on Christmas.
There'll be enough people covering.
I've done the Christmas game. What was it? Oh, it was when LeBron came back to Miami. I did that Christmas game because I was living in Miami at the time, and it was like, it was such a weird feeling to be like at a basketball game on Christmas. Like, Even from a fan's perspective, I think that would be a weird thing to do. Although I guess like some people like do the whole Christmas thing and then they use that as like a family outing or whatever. But even that, like, it just felt weird to me to be at a game on Christmas.
There is nothing worse than the last game on Christmas Day. With the Clippers, we were usually the last game on Christmas Day, you know, when we were decent with Chris Paul and I was in that run. And that is, and as a fan, when I'm watching these games, I just don't have the stamina after that. Like, that last game, I'm like, I just want it to be over very quickly.
Oh, man. And when I was doing the CBS thing of, like, you know, we had to divide up the games we were going to recap that day and all that. So, like, oh, man, that was awful.
That's the worst.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Zach, I've taken up all your time. I know you probably have, like, four more podcasts.
Oh, I got a lot of pods to do today, man. Got a lot of pods.
Plug what you got to plug. When's the next Run It Back?
I think we're looking at end of the first week or beginning of the second week of January. I'm still deciding between two different shows or episodes to do for that show, but I think we're targeting basically that end of the first week of January.
Awesome. Plug your other stuff and let's let you get out of here.
You know, all the podcasts on Leverage the Chat Network, I'm on two of them consistently, my show Talk Hoops and The Basketball Friends. Steal your friends' phones or hack their computers and subscribe to those. And then read me on fanragsports.com and at Talk Hoops on Twitter for all of your Nick Cage tweets.
Yes. Let him know when you're watching the movie next.
Exactly.
Zach, thanks for coming on, man.
Anytime, Mo. Thank you.
And that's it for our show. Be sure to rate us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. Have yourselves a great week.